Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
What we saw was PSNI vehicles being petrol-bombed by children. That was how Chairman of the Police Federation, Liam Kelly, described the violence in Derry this weekend, following the annual Apprentice Boys March commemorating the lifting of the siege of Derry in 1689. Separately, across the UK, police have now arrested some 800 people, including two more in Belfast this morning, who have been taking part in anti-migrant riots across England and Northern Ireland. For more on this, we're joined by crime correspondent and columnist with the Belfast Telegraph, Alison Morris, and from the UK by former Detective Superintendent of the Metropolitan Police, Shabnam Chowdhury. Good morning to both of you. Alison, can I start with you first in Derry, please? Was there any anti-migrant element to the violence there this weekend, or was it more familiar and seasonal?
Yeah, I think this is more a sort of good old-fashioned, you know, riot. This involved Republican youth, and there had been an Apprentice Boys parade in the city earlier that day, and that obviously meant that there was an increased number of police officers around who had been dealing with the sort of traffic and the road closures connected to that, and they seemed to then become the target of what were, in some cases, really young children. I mean, there's footage online that one of our photographers had taken for the Belfast Telegraph that shows a young lad with a petrol bomb who I would be shocked if he was more than 7 or 8 years of age. So it involves mainly teenagers, but some very young children. And, you know, politicians in that area, people like the MP Colm Eastwood, have accused much older distant Republican elements of becoming involved in the orchestration of that violence as well. And one older, a 46-year-old man, has been arrested. And I think we're up to something like 10 police officers were injured during that disorder.
Mm-hmm. Because it would be hard to imagine something like this being organised by children that kind of age. Clearly there has to be adult forces in the background.
Yeah, well, the fact that there was petrol bombs sitting, you know, ready and waiting to go would indicate that there are older people who are orchestrating this and putting children in harm's way. At one point, we had the bizarre situation where the chief constable had put a statement out in connection with the disorder, urging parents to come and bring their children home. And I can't remember ever seeing a statement like that from the PSNI, especially coming from the sort of top brass of the PSNI. And so I suppose that there are questions in relation to who is it that's organising this, what kind of exploitation is going on with children who are being used and sent to the front line. And then also, obviously, we have an element of sort of parental responsibility and what is going on that these children are able to get themselves involved in this disorder. I mean, the PSNI are in heavily armed Land Rovers. Throwing a petrol bomb at a Land Rover isn't going to particularly do much damage to anybody other, you know, because those vehicles are built to withstand that kind of attack. But to see a small child waving a petrol bomb, I mean, had that spilt or went over them or any other child in the vicinity, we could be, you know, waking up to a very different scene this morning. And then how do we deal with that and who takes responsibility for that when small children are going to be injured in that way?
Alison, why is it so easy to recruit small children to this kind of violence? What are the youth diversion schemes? What are the resources that are laid on for this cohort in Derry like?
Yeah, I mean, we always say that, you know, those youth workers who are out there doing the work of, you know, 10 people, what has happened in recent time is a lot of that money has been cut, just like everywhere else. There is a shortage in the budget, and a lot of the youth workers who are doing the diversionary work on the streets have lost their funding and had to go and get jobs elsewhere. That cut to youth services is, I think, crucial when we come to looking at how hard we deal with this sort of thing. And then also, I mean, I always say any time I'm in Derry, it's quite obvious that there are sections of that city, places, I suppose, in and around the Craigan and the Bogside, which are not policed in the way you would expect any society to be policed in peacetime. You know, we're 30 years into the ceasefires, and yet they're obviously still policed on a security foot. And that's because there's, you know, there's a distant Republican threat there. So we're in a cycle where the police have to place it on a security footing. And then if you're a young person growing up there, who should be growing up in a peaceful society, you're only seeing police and I suppose in the way that many of us would have remembered during the conflict, you know, during the Troubles, where you see police in heavily armed vehicles, and therefore they, I suppose, the psychological impact of that is that they become the enemy. They're not seen in a community policing footing. So there's a vicious cycle there, and I'm not really sure how you go about breaking that. But yeah, I think that, you know, questions need to be asked about the cuts to those youth services and the impact that that is having then. The children are on the streets during these summer months especially, and they're very, very easily and susceptible, I suppose, to older forces who are pushing them to the front line, knowing that they are the ones who are organising it, but unlikely to have to face the consequences of it, because it's young people who are risking not just their lives in terms of injuries, but also if they're caught and prosecuted, you know, the future consequences of that in terms of employment and travel and everything else, you know, can have a long-reaching effect into their lives for years to come.
Okay, let me bring in Shabnam Chowdhury, formerly of the London Met, at this point. What Alison was just talking about there, arrest and prosecution, is that message which has been very vigorously communicated across England in the last couple of days, is it having the desired effect?
Yes, good morning to you. Yes, I think it is. I think also the fact that they have increased the resourcing across policing in the relevant areas has also helped. But when you're looking at more than 700 arrests, I think it was maybe 800 convictions and serious prison sentence, custodial sentences being dished out, I think people, these violent thugs, particularly those that are going out to be purely violent, are having second thoughts about whether they should be attending any kind of protest.
Would it be naive to say, Shabnam, that a corner has been turned?
I don't want to get complacent. I'd like to think a corner has been turned. I think the last two anti-racist protests that you've seen have also helped, because of the fact is that the large amount of people across England, Ireland and Wales are, you know, Scotland, wherever it is, and these events are taking place, are against this type of violence, and they're standing together to be united. So I think that really, really does help a lot. So I like to think we have turned a corner. Let's just hope that policing doesn't take its foot off the pedal and are very, very mindful that these events could turn and escalate very quickly, as they have done in the last week or so.
You can police, or sorry, your former colleagues can police people who say hateful things online, but how do you police something like the interventions of a man like Elon Musk in the last couple of days?
Yeah, very, very difficult, that one. But when I say difficult, the frontline officers are not those that are looking and trawling online to see where there's hate or violence being incited. These are done by specialist teams, because you can't afford to deplete the resources from the frontline. But this needs the work of senior leadership in policing. It needs the work of the government, and it needs the work of the high-tech companies who are allowing this information, misinformation, misleading the public, retweeting and re-messaging of inciting violence that needs to be done. Elon Musk is it owns X and should be far more responsible, in my view, than what he actually is. But in order to police these type of people, you need to have the legislation in place to be able to prosecute them and to hold them to account.
It must infuriate your former colleagues, though, that you can have people like Elon Musk retweeting figures like Tommy Robinson, that you can have people like Andrew Tate pouring petrol onto the flames of what's going on at the moment with apparent impunity.
Well, it infuriates them, it frustrates them, it makes life very, very difficult for them, because they are the ones that seem to take the brunt of it. It's a significant number of officers have been assaulted and subjected to violence with bottles, bricks, paving slabs and all sorts. And this is partly to do with the fact that when you've got these people who are highly influential and have huge platforms, sharing, retweeting, supporting each other, Elon Musk supporting the likes of Tommy Robinson retweeting, is absolutely disgraceful. And let's not just forget, there's also politicians that are in the mix here, people that have big influential platforms that could actually use their constituents and go and have the voice that they need to make change within Parliament and not on social media.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There are some very prominent political figures who have been unhelpful, to say the least. But what of those at the level of this woman married to a Tory councillor? I just want to read what it is that she thought fit to publish in the last couple of days. She said, mass deportation, now set fire to all the effing hotels full of the bastards for all I care. If that makes me a racist, so be it. When you have people who would, you know, as the spouse of a Tory councillor who would have been a part of the political establishment engaging in that kind of rhetoric, you must be worried about the environment in which you and your colleagues are operating.
Well, I'm worried for my colleagues, for sure, for my former colleagues. What I would say is, fortunately, this particular individual has now been charged, so obviously can't say anything more about that because it's due to go through a court process.
But okay, but let's not say anything about her, but it is a comment that is of a type, and it is indicative of a level of anger that just hasn't been expressed publicly before.
No, for sure. But that's because we now have social media, and maybe these this type of rhetoric was expressed before, but it wasn't written down in black and white, so to speak. But I think the fact is the law is coming down hard. I think two individuals are sentenced last week to 32 months and 20 months for that type of rhetoric, which actually incites violence. It doesn't help policing because, as I say, police officers are there to police the front line, to protect and serve the public. These police officers that are going to these riots and to these violent incidents are your everyday police officers that are there as frontline emergency response, dealing with critical matters, and those officers that are also neighbourhood police officers who gather intelligence, who work within communities. Those resources are being depleted on the front line and then having to police because it's rhetoric like that that is making a huge amount of difference to the job that they're doing or trying to do.
Shabnam Chowdhury, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning, and also Belfast Telegraph's crime correspondent Alison Morris before you. Coming up, Brian O'Connell has been out about with Gardaí in Cork.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.